Welcome back to the Red Fern Book Review. I am your host, Amy Mayer, and today I am joined by Jeff for one of my last podcasts of this season. And we are here to discuss two hot new releases, and they are Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson and Ghost Music by On You. And we're also going to talk about a book that Jeff DNF'd or did not finish, as we say in the book world. And we will also finish up with a discussion of a show that we're binging and a podcast that I'm loving. So with that, I wanted to say welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks, Amy. Excited to be here once again.
So first, let's talk about the book that wasn't. We talked and you decided on a book that you thought you'd be really interested in. And no surprise, you picked a big, intense book and you didn't finish it. So can you tell people what was the book and what happened?
So I decided to read The Passenger by Cormac McCarthy, which is his, you know, relatively new book. It just came out, I think, at the end of 2022. And, you know, Cormac McCarthy, like, seems like an author that I should really like. He's, you know, he's a very good writer. You know, he writes complicated and sort of like this one, at least, is kind of, you know, has some surrealism to it. So on paper, he's got all the things that I like in an author, but I found this book, while it was really beautifully written, very difficult to read, like really, really hard. And I also found it quite bleak. Like all the characters are kind of, nobody's very happy. There's nothing very like, yeah, there's no real hope in the book, I found. And about halfway through, I decided it probably wasn't going to be for your listeners because it wasn't a fit for them. For most of them, and I didn't really love it. So
what's the basic plot?
So it's about this character named Bobby Western. He lives in Passe Christian in the 1980s, and he is a salvage diver.
I used to live there briefly.
You did, yeah. You used to live right by there in Biloxi. So at the beginning of the book, his employer, the salvage diving company, is employed by a mysterious customer to go and do a salvage dive on an airplane that's gone down. And when they're diving, they discover that the flight recorder is missing and that there's only 7 passengers in there out of the 8 passengers on the manifest. So throughout the book, they're kind of looking and trying to figure out what happened to the mysterious 8th passenger. And there, you know, the mystery ensues. So the story sort of happens in with two main characters, Bobby Western, who he traverses his way across, you know, the taverns of New Orleans first, and then across the United States. He's constantly sort of discussing philosophy and quantum physics and all these very sort of like intellectual, you know, social things that are going on in the world. But you know, it's all in the premise of, you know, trying to find out what's happened to this mysterious 8th passenger. And the whole time he's sort of constantly shadowed by these mysterious agents who want to question him about the plane crash. And, you know, so there's this real sort of aura of paranoia over the whole book.
It sounds like a pretty good premise.
It's kind of interesting. It's actually kind of an interesting story, and it's very well written. That story, you know, is paralleled by the story of Bobby Western's sister, who is named Alicia, and she's schizophrenic. And so half the story is Bobby Western's story, and, you know, maybe less than half is Alicia's story. But Alicia's story is really a story, you know, told through someone who has schizophrenia. It's all, you know, things that are going on in her mind. She has hallucinations, and the leader of the cast of characters in her hallucinations is a character named the Thalidomide Kid. And he's got, you know, a group of merry pranksters who, you know, hallucinate with him, and they're constantly sort of tormenting and cajoling Alicia. And what's really bleak about it is, like, they're her tormentors, but they're kind of her only friends. So that part of the story is really hard to follow. It's very surreal. You never quite know what's going on. And even for me, I struggled with that. I love stuff that's super surreal. That's the kind of stuff I like to write, that I like to read. But I found this, a little bit too hard.
So The Passenger came out in the fall, and then it came out, I think, in November. And then a month later, Stella Maris, the sequel, was released. And what that is that's the name of the psychiatric hospital where the main character, which is Alicia, Alicia's the star of the sequel, has admitted herself to. So that's the second book's about her.
And the second book is the first book that Cormac McCarthy has written with a female character as the lead, which I thought was kind of interesting. He's a very sort of, his books are pretty male dominated, I would say.
Yeah, and his books, a little about him. So Jeff mentioned that you tried to read all the Pretty Horses in the Road, I think. Mm-hmm. And those are his best known books. He's written 12 novels. He's written plays, screenplays, short stories. And as we talked about, his focus is the American West and often the post-apocalypse. He uses a lot of violence. And one thing I read about him is he uses kind of his own form of punctuation. Did you notice that when you were reading that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And
yeah,
does it work?
It does work. I mean, it's, he is playing with sentence structure and he's playing with grammar and he's playing with punctuation a lot, but it works. I mean, I still feel like it flows. It's, you know, it's a hard to read book, but not because of that.
And he's considered one of the great American writers, and he has been compared to Hemingway. Another kind of fun fact, his name is actually he was born Charles McCarthy, but he changed his name because there is a famous ventriloquist, Edward Bergen, who's Candace Bergen's dad, and he had a dummy named Charlie McCarthy. So he changed his name, and they're not sure where it came from. Some people say it was a family nickname. He has Irish heritage. And then other people say it was the name given to him, or he changed his name because it was the person, Cormac McCarthy constructed Blarney Castle, and he liked the idea of that. So that's kind of cool. Okay, so anything else you want to say about that book?
No.
Okay, I think we're good to...
We're good.
I think you probably don't want to read this book unless you're already a fan. That's what I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I think if you love Cormac McCarthy, you'll love this book. This is like, it's considered, you know, his... I wouldn't call it the pinnacle of his writing, but it is certainly a book where he's taking great liberty because he's kind of towards the end of his career and he's already proved that he's a great writer. So I found it a little self-indulgent, you know, because he just wrote so much.
Yeah.
So if you like Cormac McCarthy, you'll like this. If you don't, you won't.
Okay, so that's a little segue, though. Cormac McCarthy is a segue to the next book we're going to talk about, which was a book that I read on my own. And it's called Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson. And it is a big book this season. So I would recommend it. I think I talked about last episode or the episode before, The Villa, we talked about that. And that this is kind of in that vein. It's a light book. It's a summer read. It's kind of the moment, but it's not very taxing. And what it's about, it's kind of a fish out of water story. It's a contemporary novel about family, love, and class. And I would say it's been marketed as a modern Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton. And it's an inner look at New York society. And the title the book is named after one of the fruit streets in Brooklyn Heights, where this book is set. And in Brooklyn Heights, which is like the fancy part of Brooklyn, there are these three streets called Pineapple, Orange, and Cranberry Streets. And they're known for their historic architecture, and they're beautiful, and they're very close to the promenade, where this is well-known kind of walkway. And the origin of the names is interesting. Legend has it that there was a local resident, that a woman that hated the fact that streets were always named after wealthy landowners. So she apparently ripped down the original street names in the middle of the night and put these names up. But then another thought is that pre-Civil War, some fruit sellers named the streets after the fruits that they sold, and it was sort of like a modern day billboard
promotion.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting. But so this book, what it's about this family called the Stockton family, and they're an old money Brooklyn Heights family. They have a place in the Hamptons. They belong to private clubs, and they the grandparents are known as Gee Gee Dee Dee Pip and Pop.
Oh my goodness. Those are horrible names.
That sounds very
waspy.
Yeah. And the family's main house is known as the Limestone. And the main characters, there are three children in the family, and there's Cord, and then there's an eldest daughter, Darlie, and then there's Georgiana. But the story is really about Sasha. And the book is told from multiple points of view, which I always find fun. But Sasha is an interloper. She's from Rhode Island. Her dad, I think, is a cop. And she grew up very middle working class. And kind of she marries Court and gets thrust into this society. So, and then there's a little bit, you know, I won't tell you much more other than you're really just getting that kind of bird's eye view. And you know, things happen, like she gets mistaken for the help at a party. One thing that I did think really rang true was they play a lot of tennis in this book, and they actually, either the author herself plays tennis or she researched it because it was authentic.
And you would know.
And I would know. I enjoy playing tennis in my free time. And but I, you know, there was another book that came out not very long ago, Leanne Moriarty. I think we talked about this, or I talked about this on the podcast. She wrote a book recently called Apples Never Fall, and it's about tennis, and it just didn't really ring true. But I wanted to read one little passage in this book that really captures kind of the vibe and the tone. And this is about Sasha and how she feels in this world that she's been thrust into. So here it says, Sasha felt wrong-footed 90% of the time, but also simultaneously felt she was Molly Ringwald in an 80s movie and everyone else was the preppy villain. Cord's world was full of pearl girls, all wearing their grandmother's earrings and crisp button-downs and loafers, as interchangeable as they were sexless. Sasha often had the sneaking suspicion that if she saw them naked, they would have bodies as smooth and flat as Barbie's. She swore to herself that the day she tied a cable knit sweater around her shoulders would be the day she died.
Good for her.
So that's it. I would say this book, I liked it. And actually, if you just want a book to have fun, and also it's always fun to read the kind of the hot book of the season, this is a book for you. It's got a fun cover. It came out in paperback, which is nice. You don't have to buy it in hardcover. But one of the really interesting things is the author herself, Jenny Jackson, because the author is really an editor. This is her first book, and this was her pandemic project. And she's kind of a wunderkind over at Knopf Doubleday. She's 43 years old. She calls herself an aging millennial. And she was the editor on the Cormac McCarthy book, The Passenger. And she's known for being a hit maker. And the books that she looks for are kind of those books that straddle the line between literary and commercial fiction. She was the editor on our favorite book of last year, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. She has edited Emily St. John Mandel, Chris Bohelian, Peter Heller, Catherine Haney, Jennifer Close. I'm reading her book right now. It's called Marrying the Ketchups. Esmeralda Santiago, Helen Ellis and the actress Selma Blair, who just recently came out with an autobiography or memoir.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So is it a commentary on waspishness?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
So it's kind of anti-waspishness.
Interesting. I think it's the ridiculousness of it.
Right.
I mean, there is a scene where, like, for example, one of the daughters, it's the eldest daughter. So she married her husband and didn't want, she has a husband, and she didn't want to have him sign a prenup because she thought it was, I don't know, means the marriage isn't going to work or something. And so because they wouldn't sign a prenup, she lost her inheritance. And it goes on to the next generation. And it's sort of, there's a whole storyline around that about, I won't get too into it because there's a little bit of a mystery around that. But I don't know. Yes. I think it is commentary.
All right.
But, and some of it's ridiculous. Like some of these people do a lot of good in the world while at the same time they leave their job and then go, you know, to a fancy gala. And, you know, the Hamptons. So there's that kind of,
right.
I don't know. Yeah. Does it sound like a book you would like?
Does it sound like a book I would like? It's probably not my genre so much. You know, I tend to gravitate towards certain kinds of books, and that's probably not in it. You know, maybe if I wanted something kind of lighter to read, which I'm reading something light right now, and I quite like it. So maybe I would like it.
Right. What are you reading now? We're both loving
it. I'm reading romantic comedy and it's quite fun.
Yeah. Don't say anything more about it. It's Curtis Sittenfeld. Right. So everyone should read that because we're going to come back in the fall and talk about it. But anyway, okay. So the second book we read is a literary fiction book and it is called Ghost Music by On You. And this is a total 180 from Pineapple Street. It's not very long. It's very literary, very dreamlike. I thought the best thing about this book was just the writing itself. But let me tell everyone just a little bit about what it's about because it's about a woman who lives in Beijing. Her name is Son Yan, and she's sad. She was a concert pianist, and she's not doing that anymore. And she's in what appears to be a loveless marriage. She lives with her husband, Bowen, but he travels all the time. And it's clear he's got either another life or other priorities. He doesn't really care. And he is a car executive. And so she's left at home with his mom, who isn't very nice to her. And she seems super unhappy. So everyone's unhappy. But the one thing that is somewhat interesting is there are talking mushrooms in this book. And there is a strange orange mushroom that comes to her at night and talks to her. So I guess we are going to call this book, it's infused with magical realism. And, and subsequent to that, there is all of a sudden a parcel of mushrooms starts arriving on this woman's doorstep every week. And so her and her mother-in-law get together and make things from these exotic mushrooms and they make soups and stews. And so there's that whole element there. So, and then eventually they find out who's been sending the package and there's a bit of a mystery there, sort of. So what did you think of the book?
I liked it. I didn't love it. I think, I didn't love it. It was very quiet.
It is a quiet book.
It is very dreamlike. I agree with that. I think the writing is absolutely beautiful, and she creates this sort of very dreamlike environment, which I think is quite beautiful, but not very much happens. It's just I found it a little slow paced. I wanted more, plot development and more going on. Yeah, that's sort of my take on it.
I would agree. Now, I'm going to ask you because I'm not really sure. Like these mushrooms, first of all, they're creepy. I'm not really sure what's going on with the mushrooms. But what did the talking mushroom mean to you?
Yeah, there's kind of two aspects to the sort of surreal part of the book. There was the talking mushrooms, and there's also like this mysterious orange cloud. I never came up with a hypothesis on what the orange cloud is about, but right. It was kind of interesting. But to me, the mushrooms are really about the stuff that gets left unsaid, you know, between family members, that's kind of like stuffed in the dark and takes on a life of its own. And so when I think the concept behind the mushrooms is when people don't talk about stuff, you know, things grow out of it that can be bad or good, and they come back to haunt you. And so the mushrooms are actually, you know, the mushroom at one point, oh, maybe I shouldn't. Well, I'll just.
I think you can. Well, I don't know how far. Okay.
I'll say it anyway. The mushroom at one point reveals, well, I'm not really a mushroom. I'm more close to a ghost. And so that was really telling to me, because it really, to me, sort of is like the ghosts of the things that are left unsaid, or the ghosts of, you know, the sort of all the things that are left in the closet that don't get talked about.
Right.
And the ghosts come back to haunt you later on in life. And that's sort of what happens.
Oh.
It's more of a ghost story than a surrealist.
Well, thing. It's called ghost music.
Exactly.
So it's a ghost music. I don't think you spoiled that there. Did the magical realism as a literary device work for you?
I read a ton of magical realism. That is my genre. So I thought I'd really like this book. And I liked it, but not, you know, what I found with that part of it is it wasn't super integrated in. It would happen in, you know, there was some mushroom stuff at the beginning. There was like a long stretch in the middle where there wasn't sort of the surrealist stuff going on. And then, you know, there was a big mushroom part of the, you know, in say the last quarter of the book, or last, not even quite quarter. So I kind of would have liked it more integrated, because it would have kept my interest a bit more, I think.
I thought the descriptions of the food was great. And there's a lot on music, if you're interested in music. And another criticism I do of the book is I didn't find at the end things totally tied together to a way that was satisfying for me. Like I really felt it was about the atmosphere that this author was creating, which I thought she did a good job.
That was the best part of it, is like this kind of dreamlike. Yeah.
If you like literary fiction, I think you should look at it. I would give this 4 out of 5 stars. I personally actually enjoyed it more than Pineapple Street, just because I thought it was beautiful writing. But
yeah, I'd give it a 4.
It is not
a 4, maybe a 3.5.
It is not a page turner. Let's just say
you gotta enjoy the words, not the stories so much.
On you a little bit about her. She was born and raised in Beijing. And she spent time in London, New York, and Paris. And her debut, she looks young to me. Well, you know, everyone kind of looks young now, but I think she's quite young. Young, air quotes.
For me, it's the opposite. I think everyone looks older than me.
Yeah, I know that. I know. That's just not, I know. Jeff's always like, oh, you know, they're our age. And they're like 35. No, no. That's not true, but you do.
Pretty close.
You do often think, or that's not true. Anyway, she's the her first book is called Braised Pork, and it came out in 2020, and I think it's a similar kind of. I think there's a lot of food, and I think there might be some magical realism there. So, she has been compared to Haruki Murakami, who is a fabulous Japanese writer with a cult following, and he's written the book she would know by him potentially is The Wind Up Bird Chronicle and Kafka on the Shore. So those are two different things people can consider. And let's talk about something that I know you loved, and that's a show we've been binging, The Diplomat. And I think a lot of you have been watching this, and if you haven't, you might want to check it out. It's a soapy, fun show about a diplomat, Carrie Russell, who is American ambassador to London, which is the cherry plum job of ambassadorships in the United States, and her rogue, dastardly husband, Rufus, played by Rufus Sewell, And they are, so they play Kate and Hal Weiler. And they've just landed in London. She's taking on this job. And that's the story. So yeah, what did you think?
I think it's fun because Hal Weiler is also a diplomat. But he, you know, and he was a diplomat, you know, in some sort of like, I can't remember where, but in like a very hot region where there's lots going on. And he, you know, now he is the spouse of a diplomat, his wife. And he doesn't know what to do with himself. So he's a funny character because he really wants to help Carrie Russell's character be a successful, you know, diplomat to England.
Right.
But he's doing it in such an underhanded and like all the worst sort of things you think about international politics. He's doing all the moves and it drives her crazy. But he is helping her. And their relationship's funny because I think he loves her. But they kind of hate each other too.
Yeah, they definitely don't like each other. They keep saying they're going to get divorced, but.
Well, I think he's in love with her though.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And there's definitely going to be a season two because we watch the whole thing and they don't even, it's obviously.
There's lots more to happen.
There's coming. I kind of want, like, I love like BBC kind of dramas. And I felt like this is more a soapy version of it. But I definitely enjoyed it. And I like that we could watch it together.
Well, and I kind of like the, you know, the view into sort of like international politics and how countries, you know, communicate and relate to each other. Although we know somebody who's in that world and she said it's totally unrealistic.
But she liked it.
But she liked the show. So.
Yeah. So. Check that out. And I wanted to conclude by highly recommending a podcast called Wiser Than Me with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's just come out and it's the number one podcast right now. I think it's surpassed Smartless. And it's Julia interviewing older women and talking about their lives. And it's very candid, as the best podcasts are. And it's also funny as she is. And I listened to the episode she did with Ruth Reichel, and it's hilarious because at one point they're having this great conversation and she's like, so I have a question. And she delves into a very personal question about a recipe that of Ruth's that she's tried and didn't quite work out. And what does she think? And should she have more almonds? And should she add this? And I don't know. It just was fun because it sort of seemed like that's what you would do with a friend. So she interviews Fran Lebowitz, Jane Fonda, Amy Tan. And I liked it. It has heart. It isn't just like Smartless. I love Smartless. But sometimes it doesn't go deep enough.
I'm super surprised that surpassed Smartless. That's an accomplishment.
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe it has.
Wow.
So
impressive.
And it's also new. So yeah. Anyway, that's all I have to say. And thank you so much for co-hosting with me today. And I hope you're going to be doing a lot of reading. So Jeff has now, he's gone to DJ school, which I think we've talked about before, which is taking away from some of his reading activities.
Yeah.
I hope you
DJ
don't give up.
Fun and kind of taking
away
up a lot of time.
So we had a delay on this podcast because he was otherwise occupied.
Engaged. Yeah.
But anyway.
Put my playlist together.
Okay. So happy reading, everyone, over the summer. And we're going to do one. Actually, we're going to do one more. We're going to come back with one of my favorite guests. Sorry, Jeff, but. Equally favorite guest.
Okay, I'll take that.
Susan Matheson, who's going to talk to everyone what they should be reading this summer. So thanks so much, and I'll talk to you later.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks.